All right, so for those who are just joining us, we're in the middle of a year-long exploration of the 10 paramis. We went through month by month exploring each one in a lot of detail. And this month in December, we're taking them as a whole to look at how they work together, how they relate, kind of stepping back and seeing the big picture of all the paramis. I think it's a helpful way to approach them. Because they are considered a kind of a completion or a completeness of a path. It was said that the Buddha in his previous lifetimes perfected each of these paramis until finally got to his lifetime that he became awakened because they had all come to enough of a fruition. Now the paramis, also translated as the 10 perfections, I think we have to have a consciousness of how we use them because sometimes we can make it a sense of something we're kind of reinforce our sense of lack or sense of inadequacy when we list this list of 10 things and attributes and feel like I'm really far away from some of them. I think it's better to just use them as a way to have a more comprehensiveness in our practice. So tonight I'd like to just do basically a recap from last week, go through each of the paramis and show how they connect one to another. So we're going to go through the list that they're classically given, but we could do an exercise of going through any of them and showing how they all interrelate, how they all support each other. So the first parami is that of generosity. And this is such an interesting place to start this whole list. And I think it helps us shift from our normal self-centered, isolated perspective to one of generosity. To realize that there's other people who could benefit from our abundance or from our energy or from our time. And that shifts us from that sense of isolation, that sense of being self-centered, because we have to actually connect with someone to offer generosity. And there's, of course, the receiving of that generosity. So this starts to shift us from our normal kind of mind, ego-driven perspective to one of interconnection. It also starts to warm the heart. It starts to bring a sense of you feel good when you're generous. There's a way that you feel your mind brightens, which helps the whole path to start to open and deepen in a beautiful way. Now, from generosity, we start to say, okay, I'm offering time, money, whatever it might be to another person. So you're starting to care for other people's well-being. And so the next parami flows really beautifully from that, and that's of ethics, sometimes called morality, sometimes called virtue. We can think of the 10 precepts as a placeholder for that. Basically, different ways we take a commitment not to cause harm to another person, not to kill, not to steal, not to misuse our sexual energy, not to lie, and not to go into intoxication. So these five as a whole help keeps the community safe, and also keeps our own practice safe, keeps our minds safe. Because when we're breaking the precepts, when we're causing harm in all these different ways, internally there's a lot of turbulence, there's a lot of fear of being caught, there's a sense of tightness that comes from that. Of course, we could talk about the karmic consequences of those unethical behaviors that comes back in some way at some point in the future. But I think of this generosity, okay, I'm connecting with my heart, and then I naturally care about not causing harm to you in these really fundamental ways. So this also has this effect of starting to quiet down the whole system. It's like there's this almost purification that starts to happen, which is a really strong way to start our practice. In the West, we tend to start with the wisdom practices. We start with, and also the cultivation practices of meditation. And when it kind of sneak in the precepts later on, or sneak in generosity as we kind of develop in that. But that's really not the way it was originally taught and originally approached, and certainly in the paramis, it's like that. So from a sense of ethics, from caring of how our actions cause harm, that starts to bring more clarity of seeing. There's a more clarity of knowing. And we start to have a deeper resolution not to, to cause harm and not to act out from some of these unwholesome roots of greed and hatred and delusion. So renunciation is the next parami. Now, renunciation is one of those ones I think we often kind of struggle because maybe it's backlash from our, some of the other religious traditions we've been involved with, and you know, Lent and Ramadan, whatever it might be, that we have to kind of give up things, and we're not really, it's not really a choice. It's like, here, I have to do it. But renunciation, I think that it's really, its maturity is come from a place of clarity, of seeing how this action or this behavior is really based in greed or hatred and delusion and actually leads to more suffering. And that clarity, we actually start to want to drop it. We want to start to release it because we start to see that those actions cause harm not only to other people, but also to ourselves. And this is this interesting, we work externally for a while, and then that naturally internally changes us. We work internally for a while, starts to naturally change our actions externally, and particularly around generosity, around non-harm. And renunciation is just a way of committing to our actions around that. So these first three paramis have this effect of settling the whole system. What I mean by that, there's less internal static that we often have if we're being, you know, unethical, when we're causing harm, if we're, you know, kind of caught in a sense of non-generosity, if we're not letting go of patterns which are causing harm to ourselves or others. When those start to fall away, we start to be able to see more clearly. And that clear seeing starts to lead to this next parami, which is of wisdom, of wisdom. Now, wisdom isn't so much in the Buddhist tradition, knowledge. Knowledge is part of that, understanding the nature of the Dharma from the lists and all the beautiful suttas. But it also is this kind of wisdom that comes from your direct knowing, your direct seeing, a deep sense of integrity that comes from seeing something for yourself. And you've all experienced this, that you know, even in a different context, some teacher might be telling you something and you say, yeah, yeah, yeah. But then one day you actually see the truth for yourself and you tell the teacher, hey, this is what I discovered. And they've been telling you for 5 years. But it's like, because you've seen it for yourself, it fits in a different way. You know, those of you who are parents know this, that we can tell our children things, but until, you know, they stumble, until they actually have some experience, that's when they actually start to learn. It's through their own mistakes, their own bad choices, basically. So wisdom starts to become something that's it has a different quality than knowledge, because knowledge, I can kind of argue about it. My knowledge is better than your knowledge. You know, the way you're interpreting it, it's not as accurate as mine. When we talk about our direct experience, our direct knowing, there's a level of inner authority which becomes, it's like it's not up to question. You're not shaken by someone disagreeing with you. Just, okay, there's a different experience, but I know this is true. Like if we went out in the parking lot and said, wow, it's so hot out there. The sun's just beating down and you're all looking at me like it's nighttime and it's like in the 40s. It's like the direct experience contradicts. You trust that more and more. So that's a beautiful expression of wisdom. Now, wisdom is that, I like to think of it as this clearing of the lens of perception, that we're able to see things how they actually are. There's a phrase that you sometimes see in the suttas, that there's kind of dust on the eyes, and we're clearing that dust. We're actually seeing things in a more direct, clear, accurate way. Because usually we see things in a way that is distorted. It's distorted through our history, our conditioning. You can see this in all the ways that we project the otherness, the sense of prejudice, racism, sexism. All the different isms are based on our conditioning, right? And if we learn to see and wake up to that, then there's a clarity that comes from that. Now, as we start to connect with that sense of wisdom, there can be a tremendous energy that starts to arise from that. the energy to align ourselves more and more with what we're knowing, what we're seeing is true. Connecting with that, it's like I want to not cause harm unnecessarily to myself. Because we start to realize that when I'm acting outside my wisdom, when I'm acting contrary to what I know is true and wise, I experience pain. I experience suffering from that. That's unnecessary. That's added on. So we're learning to align ourselves. One example of this is the sense of realizing our own mortality, that we're not going to live forever. I mean, for most of us, I don't tend to go around thinking, okay, I'm going to die someday. I tend to think about the life that's in front of me. There's this denial of the fact that, you know, that this life will come to an end. As we start to take that in, there's often an urgency to come that comes from that, to live life as well as we can, to really treat people well, to love well, and to grow from that, to see how deeply can I understand the nature of life. Now, from the sense of energy, sometimes that can get a little bit distorted because we get this sense, the urgency starts to take over. There's the kind of the passionate urgency that brings the motivation to practice, to kind of cut through delusion and ignorance. But sometimes there's the urgency like, you know, I just need to, you know, I want to be awakened by now. I want to get over these patterns. Or maybe I can't get awakened, but at least I can get rid of my critical self. Maybe I can get this mind to stop talking all the time. You know, I've been practicing for, you know, X number of years. Why hasn't it happened yet? You know, so there's an impatience that arises sometimes when the energy gets a little out of balance. And then the next parami, conveniently enough, is patience. So patience. So energy gives that sense of, okay, the energy or the force to really practice deeply, to really realize the truth more and more. And patience gives a sense of letting things unfold at their own pace. It starts to take that sense of will that sometimes creeps in with energy, that I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to obtain something, gain something, own something, to letting it actually arise in its own timing, its own pace. And patience is one of those things. I think if you think of it, the American culture, patience isn't one of the top things you think of, right? You know, we tend to be, you know, hurrying up, you know, drive on the freeway. How patient are we with each other? How patient are we with ourselves? And patience combined with energy, I think, are a beautiful balancing act, that we have the energy to keep practicing, but there's also a patience to allow things to ripen of their own accord. I remember hearing a nun talk about awakening, and it's like sitting underneath a tree with fruit on it, and you sit there until the fruit ripens and falls into your lap. You know, versus trying to pull the, you know, put some sun lamps down or put fertilizer and try to hurry up the process. There's a sense of waiting for things to arise. You do what you can, you practice as well as you can, but the will can only go so far. Another teacher talked about, in terms of some of the deeper senses of liberation and awakening, it's like you can get to the door and you can knock on the door, but then you just have to wait for the door to open on its own. You can't make the door open. You can't get your pry bar and try to get it to open. And the more you do that, the more the door stays shut and locked. So patience. And then from patience, we move to truthfulness. So truthfulness. Now, truthfulness is interesting because we could think, okay, it was already covered in the ethical part of not lying. And perhaps this one is more about this expression of what's true versus not lying. You know, lying is like denying what's true, expressing a denial of truth, a lie, versus truthfulness is this, first of all, connecting more and more deeply with what's actually true, and then a sense of expression of that. And all the paramis to this point start to give us access more and more to what's true. That clearing of that lens of how it's obscured, how it's distorted, it becomes more and more clear. So it's able to perceive that nature of things. And part of that is our own inner truthfulness. Now, truthfulness is one of those ones also, I think it's helpful to have some nuances around, let's say. Because I can tell you what I think is true, and I'm really conveying my opinion. I'm conveying my ideas of things. And if I try to impose that upon you, like, oh, you need to do this. This is how you should be. You can feel kind of the violence of that. You can feel the oppression of that. Versus realizing, okay, my truth or my experience, maybe it's relatively true, or maybe it's tapping into something that's more universally true. But that universal truth starts to go more and more to what we can't really put words to in a very clear way. We can kind of point to it, we can kind of hint at it, but ultimately it's that direct seeing that matters. So from truthfulness, that deeper understanding of what's true, and part of that also is just becoming more comfortable in your own skin. To actually, okay, I'm okay how I am. I don't have to always be changing and tweaking and modifying myself. There's kind of a subtleness that starts to come in all your blemishes, all your faults, but yet there's a perfection that you start to appreciate more and more. And from truthfulness comes resolve. So the clarity of seeing the nature of things, it's like relative to energy, but it's a kind of a deeper sustained commitment. It's like, okay, this is really, I'm bringing everything around to connect with this one intentionality, this one purpose of awakening in this case. And when I talked about resolve in our month exploration of it, I was reflecting how it seemed like resolve would usually come at the beginning of a list like this. Have your resolve, okay, you're going to get through this list, check off all the paramis, have your card all checked off and get a little sticker at the end or something like that. But that kind of resolve tends to have a lot of self mixed in, a lot of ego mixed in. There's a lot of sense of me trying to get a better self and prove who I am, what I am. So part of that is necessary. Part of it is to become as healthy as we can, as whole as we can. And at some point, we have to realize that that sense of self is actually an illusion. So that resolve, at this point in the paramis, has a level of maturity, a level of understanding that comes with that. And then from resolve, the next one is loving kindness, which is interesting. It's like we have, okay, I'm working, to become more truthful. I'm having a sense of resolve. There's more wisdom and energy. And then I go back from that place back to interconnection, back to turning toward another person or toward experience itself with this warmth of heart, this sense of interconnection. I think that's such a beautiful piece in these paramis, that we start with generosity, which is an expression of connection, and then we go to loving kindness, this warmth of heart, this willingness to be next to experience, to turn toward life, to turn toward ourselves and others. The final parami is that of equanimity. And this one brings this kind of balancing of how loving kindness can start to become attachment. It's like, I've been offering metta to you for the last week. Why aren't you happier? That kind of a thing. Or that expectation that our wishes will make a difference, will change someone's reality. And as we talked about last month, one of the equanimity phrases that your happiness is not dependent, or is not based on my wishes for you. It's based on your actions. It's just based on your choices that you make in your life. So equanimity brings this perspective of wisdom into loving kindness. Right? So loving kindness and wisdom start to really work together. So these 10 paramis, you know, as we've explored, we can take each one and dive into it. We can also start to see how they work as a whole. And what I encourage you with the homework this week is to notice which of the paramis, and perhaps as you listened, there's some of the paramis that you said, yeah, I really like that one. I really feel like I got that one. Other ones like, eh, I don't really like that one, or I'll come back to that one later, maybe a couple years from now. Those ones which you kind of brush off are actually the ones that perhaps need the most attention to start to broaden your practice, to deepen your practice. And that's what we'll talk about in the small groups. All right, thank you for your attention. And we'll take a break in a second, but I'd like to just throw the announcements in now so we capture everyone. So one is Donna. So Donna is this definition of generosity, but particularly that's how organizations like Seattle Insight, we really depend upon people's generosity to pay the rent. You know, we're running a little bit of a deficit, so we need people to step up a little bit more with their offerings. And teachers like myself, we receive a stipend from SIMS to help us connect with our compensate for our administrative work we do behind the scenes. But the teachings itself, that's why there's often two baskets in our events. So consider offering Donna, have a live relationship to that. Speaking of Donna, we have a room down the hall, you can check it out, that we're trying to raise some funds to help get like a refrigerator and some other things to help make it more a nice place to have day-longs, to have social events. So there's a fundraiser on the website, prominent donate or North Room fundraiser button on the top, upper right top. All right, thank you all. So we'll take a 5-minute break, we'll come back, and then we'll have some small group exploration of these paramis. All right, welcome back. All right, so in a moment, we'll form into groups, both in person and also online. And these groups are a chance for you to practice expressing your how you're working with the Dharma, how you're working with your practice, and also to be, at the same time, really work with listening deeply, to listen without an agenda, to listen with an open heart. And it's really a kind of a rarefied situation to be able to talk about the Dharma in this way. So we'll take the homework from last week. So basically all 10 paramis. And which ones do you find that are really resonate with you? Which ones maybe are less developed? And what's the effect of that imbalance? Can you perceive that? Or maybe just how do they all kind of work together in your life? Or you might just pick one if that seems like that's too many. I think the human mind can only hold about 7 things before we start to lose the list. So you can also pick one that you're trying to work with and how it maybe gets balanced by the other paramis. Right? Does that make sense? All right, so we'll spend about 20 minutes. Just monitor your time, you know, so each person has a chance to share. It's not really a time to give advice or suggestions. Because that tends to add an interesting dynamic, which isn't always appreciated. All right, so Ken put the practice and reflection for those online. All right, so those in person, go and find about 3 or 4 other people. And those online, we'll put you in some groups in a moment. All right, welcome back. So I'm curious what you discovered or what you explored, and if there's any questions or sharing you like to do, both here in person and also online.
I can start out since I got this here, and then Judith raised her hand up there. This a whole year of practicing the paramis feels, I don't know, I'm not even sure what I'm saying, but it feels like a lot. It feels like I hardly know where I was at the beginning of the year. But I know that I'm changed now. I know that there's a different felt sense after practicing the paramis for a whole year. And I was just saying, I'm doing a talk on Thursday night, and I'm still not even sure what I'm going to talk about, because it just feels like a lot. It feels like, you know, what has happened this year? And, you know, like patience. I feel like there is more patience, or at least I see it more. I see when I'm not patient in a different way than I did before I started doing this practice in such a, I mean, that's my biggie. Energy, resolve. I mean, they're all beautiful practices in themselves, and all together, they're like this amazing thing that happened this year. And I'm not even sure how to describe it yet.
Yeah, sometimes it's like we're still in the middle of that process, and we just, you know, maybe need a few years of perspective to realize, oh yeah, that I can see some shifts happen because of that in-depth focus. Yeah, sometimes we're really clear about what our practice is doing and how it's unfolding, and sometimes it's really, you know, like Narayan sometimes says, it's not really our business how the practice, our practice is. We just keep doing it, and just kind of, it starts to transform us, and we realize, oh wow, there's a different level of patience than I realized was possible, like that set point has really shifted.
Yeah, thanks.
Great, thank you, Cheryl. Yeah. All right, go ahead, Judith.
Okay, yeah, could you say...
Let's hang on just a second, Judith, let's bump up her volume. Okay, yeah. Go ahead now.
Oh, okay.
Yep, you're good.
Okay, could you say a little more about energy? We had a question about energy in our group, and I realized that is one that I really haven't thought much about. I mean, I know we did it, but I think I just thought, oh, I have plenty of energy or something, but it's different. And anyway, we were kind of muddled about it. So,
yeah, energy, that's one of the months I only taught once that month. I think Carrie took a lot of that one, if I recall. But yeah, energy, you can, there's different words that, you know, have different Pali translations, but they also interrelate. Like there's effort, there's energy, and how do we apply those to, how do those arise? So I think energy is that kind of that fuel that kind of keeps us going in the practice. You know, maybe sometimes it's kind of a slow burn that, okay, I wake up, I don't feel like practicing, but I'm going to get up and practice anyway. There's that energy comes forth. It's like the long sustaining quality. And sometimes energy has more of that kind of fiery element that I really want to know this part of the Dharma. I want to understand this aspect of myself. And so I see it often as a kind of a counterbalance to the, you know, the power or the force of delusion, of unconsciousness, of ignorance. And that's often think of our practices that we have this kind of backlog of unconsciousness or of delusion that's keeping us, you know, tied to suffering, not seeing things clearly. We think doing this thing is actually going to make me happy when it actually perpetuates my suffering. So there's this level of confusion that we live with. And so it's almost like a fog that obscures the landscape. And so energy starts to give the power to start to burn through that, to start to see through it. So it's one of those factors that we you know, brings that quality of skillful will, skillful application of our energy and our work, really, and how to be with the practice.
It seems to me it kind of merges into resolve in a way.
Yes, yeah, I think resolve, yeah, we could kind of group that one also. I think resolve, you know, just the way I'm kind of holding it right in this moment anyway, is a little bit of a deeper kind of quality. Like, you know, think of, you know, the biggest example is the Buddha having this deep resolve to fully awaken. You know, he'd been using lots of energy and lots of practice and lots of deep desire to awaken. But at some point, he just had this deep resolve, like, I'm not going to get up until I've awoken. And that kind of deep, it's like a deeper level of commitment that sometimes we think we have until, you know, something tests us, or until we really get, you know, when it, we really, everything gets aligned. So there's also a sense of inner alignment, or a little bit, or inner integrity, that things are, okay, this is, I'm really full-hearted here. I thought it was before, but now I really am.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense.
Thank you, Judith. All right, anyone else? Yes, Romilly.
I have a question about sort of invoking, let's say, loving kindness.
Yes.
Rodney used to say, relax, observe, and allow. So if I'm in going down like a path that is like a negative path, and I'm just regurgitating like the past, and if I actively bring loving kindness to myself and the other, then I'm not, how does that like play with allowing, you know, I'm not supposed to suffer. So it's, is that wisdom then? I'm actively changing it, right? Like if I wake up and I actively change what's happening, can you speak to that?
Sure. So the seemingly contradiction between in doing something more active or intentional with our practice or our life, you know, bringing loving kindness to it or compassion, versus like what Rodney used to talk about is the relax, observe, and allow. Think of it in terms of those three are more of kind of a meditative technique that we're learning to meet this moment's experience as fully as we can. So it's kind of a refinement or a clarification of the meditation technique itself. And we can expand that to connecting with the present moment, just how it is. So if I relax my resistance to it, if I allow it to be seen, allow it to have its, if I stop arguing with the fact that it's here, and I also able, that allows me to observe from that. That becomes the launching pad for how we act, right? So I might be practicing, let's say I'm feeling triggered by someone or felt hurt by someone. My first thing is to, okay, go through that, you know, to use your words, to relax, allow, and observe. I'm going to notice the sense of contraction of heart. I'm going to notice how the mind kind of wants to spin a story around my inadequacy or my unlovability or whatever it might be. And I'm able to kind of perceive and observe all that. Okay, so that's like that touching in. And from that touching in, then you ask, okay, what's needed here? You know, is it, maybe sometimes it is doing absolutely nothing with it. And that's more of this kind of a wisdom factor. But sometimes what's really needed is an action that's outward, to actually express loving kindness, for example, to express compassion. And that's that tricky line, because if we stay too much just in the observing and witnessing, we become a little too passive, right? And we can make this really dramatic, like this week we went out on the Ave and a car is racing toward us. We don't want to just sit there and say, okay, relax, allow, observe as this car, the lights are getting closer and closer, feeling the fear, you know, and then it hits me, okay, I feel the broken bones. You know, it's like, you know, we jump out of the way. So it's similar to that. And so maybe you have someone in your life that you're feeling sorrow to, or you're feeling like you're going down one of those patterns like you talked about. And those patterns, I think, what do you call it? The regurgitation of a pattern. That's a fun way to say it. So you're kind of doing the pattern over and over again. the relax, allow, and observe allows you to perceive that pattern in a more complete way, in a more full way. Because sometimes we jump to try to get rid of it before we fully have understood it, we fully seen it, right? So if you don't fully seen it, then maybe there's roots that we don't really observe. Like if we're trying to cut out a weed, or sometimes if you ever cut a stump out, you know, you cut all the roots around, it's like still really solid there. But maybe there's a root that's not seen. You perceive that root and then you can access it. So, and sometimes it's like you need to actually go into action much sooner because part of the pattern has a kind of a frozenness to it. Or maybe going opposite of what the pattern suggests. And that can be the expression of loving kindness. Does that help?
Yeah. So sort of saying do both.
Yeah, do both. We need both. Yes.
Just the timing, you know, where if I'm getting drowned by the observation, then do something.
Yes, that's right. A lot of it is kind of trial and error, because which one do you lead with? It varies. I can't give you a recipe that always do this 10-step protocol and you're going to be happy. It's going to be like sometimes you have to reverse the steps. But what you can rely on is your own inner discernment, your own wisdom that's able to perceive how, you know, what's the cause and effect of that, right? So let's say someone is upset, and I'm just like sitting there observing it, you know, and they get like more upset because I'm just ignoring them, right? Okay, that's not going the right way. Or if I jump in too soon and I say, no, I just want to be listened to. Oh, I needed to listen more. I need to connect more with that. So you can listen to the feedback externally from other people, the feedback of life, and also the internal feedback. You start to feel things are loosening, starting to move. There's a softening of the investment in that pattern. Then that's going the right way. If the pattern just seems like it's still entrenched, then try the other way. Yeah, I think it's a really important, you know, it's really important that piece between that receptivity, that observing, that allowing the moment to be just how it is, and when do we have to have courage to actually do something different, to step in and make a change.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, go ahead. I think I see two people. Kathy, let's go with you, and then Eileen, we can do you next.
Okay, thanks, Tim. I think you've addressed most of my question, but I was finding also, we were finding wisdom kind of slippery. And I have something written down that I think you said last week. My own wisdom is always finite. I think you said that. So, and then from your comments, the previous questioner, it sounds like wisdom is the best we can do in a moment.
Well, we can talk about wisdom, you know, in different kind of levels. Like maybe it's helpful to think about relative wisdom versus absolute wisdom. So I think that was what I was talking about last week, is my personal wisdom is always going to be, you know, a little limited, a little bit biased. You know, like the example of the elephant and the people without sight getting a hold of one part of the elephant, feeling through that one sense of touch and arguing that this is what an elephant is based on feeling just the tail or the trunk or the leg. And so it's true, it's relatively true that that part of the elephant feels like that, but we don't realize there's this whole other aspect. And so the absolute is more somehow being able to perceive the entirety of the elephant and entirety of different people's interpretation of and perception and how all that is an aliveness. And often the sense of the absolute reality, it's almost like putting words to it already makes it a little invalid or a little bit more limited than it is. Sometimes the words can really resonate with your understanding or your seeing of reality. It's like, oh yeah, that's, I can feel that wisdom from that, from my own experience. And sometimes it's, you know, it has levels of distortion, because it's ultimately it's kind of outside of the world of thoughts and ideas. It's that direct knowing.
Yeah. Sounds aspirational. Thanks, Tim. That's helpful.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, Eileen.
Hi, great to see everyone today. Thank you for your teaching. I was getting all discouraged about the parami because I thought, I'm not perfect, it's not going to work. But when you called them aspirations, that helped me. And then I related it more to the fact that I'm into strength training, and this is like muscles. It's like I'm developing muscles, and that really helps me. And the one that I guess I worked on the most is about generosity and renunciation, and those two actually, and maybe some wisdom, because I was telling my group, I got into letting go of stuff in my apartment, decluttering, but I realized that, you know, letting go of the papers and the shirts I don't wear anymore and that kind of stuff that someone else could enjoy, really was freeing me up inside. Like letting go of papers that had to do with some difficult situations in my past led me to say, hey, I need to forgive those people and just let that go. And so there was a lot more decluttering in a sense inside than just getting rid of the stuff. And then I also realized that the household items and whatever I'm letting go of, which are usable and somebody else can enjoy them, that my stuff doesn't define me. I don't, it's all kind of extraneous. And so letting go of stuff had, didn't diminish me in any way. It has helped me to feel more centered, actually, to not have this stuff that isn't me in the first place. So that's how they've been kind of, these muscles have been working together for me lately.
Beautiful. As you speak, I can hear the influence of each of the paramis, you know, that you, oh, like the renunciation, but then there's the kind of the wisdom around that this doesn't serve you, and the energy that comes from being released of it, and how it just starts to become this cycle there. And just like, you know, to use the analogy of strengthening the body in a really uniform, balanced way allows the body to function as a whole, you know, able to, you know, unless, yeah, you can actively use the body. And so we use our spirituality and our life in a more full, complete way. Yeah, it sounds like the paramis are deepening in you in a beautiful way. Thank you, Eileen. All right, maybe time for one or more. One more question, two more questions. Okay, well, maybe that's good for tonight. And I think you're fine as you know, if you participate regularly with these topics, they kind of work behind the scenes. There's like, there's this kind of percolation. And, I, you know, as a teacher, when I offer a talk, it's nice to just kind of let it kind of work in the subconscious and work how I, you know, I start to see it in more and more complete ways. And that's one of the delights of holding these paramis or any of these teaching themes. So next week we'll have a new talk around the paramis that I'll be offering, and then we'll do a final discussion like we did tonight, the last week of December. All right, so I wish you all well, and thank you for your good hearts. Goodbye, everyone online. Nice to see everyone from afar and near.
Thank you.
Thank you all here in person.